How high do you think we're going here, Michael? And do you think Bitcoin will eventually take over the real estate market?
1000% it will.
It's going to take over the real estate investment market. Yeah, as countries start competing to acquire Bitcoin, people are going to start being like, yeah, okay, everyone, we've got to focus on one thing. And what you're going to see is government saying, well, we don't even want to bother maintaining our currency. Let's just deal in Bitcoin. And I think a lot of countries start shaking hands and becoming on the same page a lot quicker. It's like being around for the invention of the wheel, but you get to buy into its invention. You got a better idea? Kangaroos literally bounce on the back of their tail, kick you like with their legs, like full strength, and then they'll throw hands at you.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Dunworth in the house. But Michael, I've heard you on a few other podcasts talk a lot about Bitcoin and real estate. In fact, you talked about how Bitcoin could be the only escape route here and that Bitcoin's price could be shooting up, even though we're talking right now as Bitcoin's crashing down to 80K. So how high do you think we're going here, Michael? And do you think Bitcoin will eventually take over the real estate market?
1000% it will. Firstly, thanks for having me, Brandon. 1000% it will, because people are buying real estate. Like, obviously people need to, it's going to take over the real estate investment market. So obviously people are still going to need homes and stuff, but like the idea of being like, oh, great, I'm going to, you know, take $1 million and get a loan on some building and then go fix a tenant in there and then figure out how to get the plumbing fixed and then get the paint job done and then pay strata fee. No, not interested. Buy Bitcoin and that's literally all you have to do. Like, be lazy. And I encourage a lot of people to think this way, because like, you're not, like, we're here for like, you know, what, 60, 80 years, 40 years, depending on how healthy you are. And it's like, you're not here to figure out how to make money for 60 years. Like, that just shouldn't be it. That's not the goal. Like, do you know what I mean? So like, we should figure out a really optimal way to do it. And then that's it. It's kind of like we learn English or maths when we're young and we use that our entire lives. Let's learn about Bitcoin at the start of our life. And then we don't have to worry about being like, oh, Schweppes, how am I going to keep up with inflation? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? Like, think about how many ideas, dreams, goals, you know, wishes that you've parked because you're like, oh, no, I'm going to work late today. Or, oh, no, I've got to find this job or something. So I really encourage people to sort of, you know, try and treat Bitcoin like property, where you hold it for 10 years, 5 years, whatever you want to call it. And then if you don't trade it, you'll be good. So basically it's like, you want to buy it, hold it, and treat it like a piece of property. Like, if you bought a property tomorrow, you're not going to get the price of the property every day and be like, ooh, mad, quick, let's sell it. Because that's going to be a pain in the ass to do. You're going to have to figure out how to sell it, move all your shit, where are you going to move to, blah, 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 blah. All that sort of stuff. And so you should treat Bitcoin the same. Bitcoin's very easy and very liquid. So people tend to jump in and out of it, like more commonly, like they'll, you know, trade because they'll treat it like a stock. But when you think about it over the long run, you're going to end up being like, okay, sick. I'm going to hold this as long as I possibly can. And then you're going to become this super like frugal person where you didn't even realize how much of a tight ass you were. Not literally, but you kind of become like, everything becomes not worthless, but sort of, yeah, it just becomes meh. I think about it like Medusa, right? Like, Medusa, when she looks at people, it turns to stone. And Bitcoin's kind of like that as an asset. Like, when you look at it, you stare at it for long enough, you're like, everything else starts turning to stone, basically. It's like, oh, that looks like a waste of time. Like, when you think about it, bang for your buck. Like, it's like, yeah, you might be able to get a property that has, you know, does a bigger return on investment or something, but you've got to take way more risk. You've got to spend way more time. And like, when you weigh everything up, as like, as the money's getting worse and worse in society, it's like a disease almost, where you've got to, you need to jump onto a life raft eventually. Like, you know, it's sick and it's making you, it's like running on a treadmill, but the treadmill's getting faster. Like, inflation's getting worse. Just jump off the treadmill. That's all you got to do. But you get, you like, you know, so it's, I don't know. Anyway, I think having that plan, the good thing about Bitcoin is that you can actually have a plan. Like you can plan for 10 years out, 15 years out, whatever it is, because you know that the money supply is not changing. But, you know, if I try and plan in Zimbabwe dollars, it's going to be pretty challenging for me, right? Like I would have thought so anyway. I've never planned in Zimbabwe dollars, but you know what I mean? So it's sort of like what has the most certainty for the longest amount of time. And like arguably that's what property, a lot of people like property as an investment because, you know, it's a long-term thing and people think long-term when they come to invest in properties and stuff like that. And so I think, yeah, so I haven't taken a breath in like 3 minutes, but yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I just reckon people can get, especially property people, they should look at Bitcoin. They'll love it. Like they should love it. I don't know why they wouldn't. Yeah, oh, no, I hate the returns. Oh, no, I hate how easy it is. Oh, no, I hate how not difficult everything is. No, I hate how no one's calling me 3 times a day to fix something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm seeing a little bit of a shift from the real estate people to get into Bitcoin because they understand, you know, the Michael Saylor analogy, right, where it's like a piece of property in Manhattan. It's like a fixed space, fixed supply. So they're understanding it from that perspective. But I do think the beauty of real estate is potentially a negative of Bitcoin. The beauty of real estate is what you lined out, right, is like it's a pain in the ass to sell. So like by design, you know, it takes 30 days to buy, right? So you have to make sure you do everything, you do your due diligence, you know really what you're buying. Where Bitcoin, you can sell it just in an instance. And I think that's what we're kind of seeing here is that when we see, you know, things start to go haywire, get a little crazy, maybe a little fuzzy, the first thing people decide to sell is their Bitcoin. Now, how do we, I guess, avoid that and get into more of like a longer mindset shift? Is it maybe looking at Bitcoin maybe based on CAGR? I know I've had Matthew Siegel and George Bodine on, and they talk about how, you know, based on the CAGR, Bitcoin in 10, 20 years will be 40 to 60 million. So we just look at it that way and just be like, okay, well, if we actually do the math, you know, this little piece is going to be worth what or what? What do you think is going to be that shift?
So firstly, when times get tough, like in terms of like, you know, like, oh, things were really good and I bought all these investments or whatever, and now things are really bad. So depends on the type of hands that bought the Bitcoin. If it's an old school person or someone who's been through, let's say, one halving cycle, which is 4 years, and that usually a halving cycle usually gives you a taste of the good, a taste of the bad, and basically what you can expect from your whole life, like of living with Bitcoin and stuff. And so as you start learning more about these halving cycles or whatever, you start measuring things in a different way. And so you look at basically 25% CAGR, I think is sort of the number that people talk about, where it's like, if you've ever bought Bitcoin and held it for 4 years, you've never not made money. Basically, there's some metric like that. And Bitcoin's basically growth rate, they're put into, I think it was like 20 to 25%. And like that's not even including, like, you've got to think of what your decay rate is if you're in inflation, like in inflated money. Like it's just like your body sweats when you're in a sauna. So if someone turns the temperature up a lot more, basically you're going to see that this sauna is going to start making you sweat a lot more, which is like your money melting, basically. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's like the ice cube, right? They say like the having fiat currency is sort of like, you know, holding onto an ice cube. Like eventually it's just going to go away. But you know, with the current state of economy, right? How are you viewing everything? Do you think that, you know, we're in a solid spot? Do you have faith in,
dude,
you know, whatever
trash
Trump is doing? All right, tell us, why do you think it's trash? Where do you?
The data tells you it's trash. I'm not saying it's trash. The data is saying it's trash.
Well, go into the data then. Tell us, Mike. Why is it trash?
$36 trillion in debt. That doesn't sound good. If I had a friend that had $36 trillion in debt and he's never been in the green in his life, and like, I would be like, dude, you got to sort your shit out. Like, we go to war with each other. People don't know each other. They're putting bullets in each other. We're not intelligent. The economy is not good. Like, quite literally, Bitcoin is almost the only thing that is actually a demonstration of, you know, human potential, I would say. It's an example of people around the world who have never met each other able to agree on something over 800,000 times in a row, every 10 minutes, and they've never met each other. Now, when you think about that from a philosophical perspective, that's wild. That's as a piece of technology, just doing that, like allowing people to agree on something repeatedly, because the only other thing we would agree on literally is the sun rising. And so Bitcoin's likened to the heartbeat. Like the way that I think about Bitcoin is pretty much, if we watch the sunrise every day, we set our watches to it, like quite literally every single thing, our body sets a body clock to it, the circadian rhythm, our work hours, our sports, everything. It all comes back to when the sun rises and not, which is like the tick of a giant clock in the universe. It's basically like the way that the universe is keeping time relative to us. Now, if we shrunk ourselves down into a digital universe where it's just atoms and machines, the machines would call the Bitcoin block height the same as the sun rising. So every 10 minutes is like a new day, a new dawn. Yes, we made it through another day. And that's basically what happens. You'll get it.
Yeah. And so as I'm putting on these sunglasses here to block out this blue light.
Blue light blockers, baby.
Yeah, I got them shining brightly in my face. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that, right? Because the only thing I think people actually agree about is time. Because,
agree. Like, you know, there isn't anything else.
We don't even all agree that the earth is, we all don't even agree that the earth is round. Half of us think it's flat. I don't know if half is too much, but I mean, who knows at this point? I mean, like, you got to question everything basically, but
100%. And I'm cool with people questioning everything. I think it's just good when we find things that we don't have differences about, because then we can work together. It's like building on a stack together when we're all using the same frequencies, or let's say colors we all agree on are the same thing, numbers we all agree on are the same thing. And so we find these core root elements of our environment, which are kind of like cheats to a video game almost, where we go, okay, cool, these are the specific cheats. We all have access to them. Everyone can use them. And there's no bias. It's not like, oh, you're not rich enough to have color. You know, it's like, oh, no, you're not rich enough to breathe oxygen. Well, I suppose like that sickness and stuff, that could be a thing. But you know what I'm saying? It's basically no one's too poor to have numbers. No one is too poor to have, like the color spectrum or whatever it is. And so these barriers to entry of those are really low. And I think about that in terms of like, that's the level that Bitcoin's on. And so like, when we think about what's actually happening here, it's like, oh my God, this is a persistent thing that we all agree on. It's like adding another thing to the, you know, people say, imagine what a new letter would be like, or trying to invent a new number. Like, you can't really think of it because you always use the other pieces that you've already got. And so Bitcoin's kind of like a new thing using all the other pieces.
Do you think we get to a point where everybody agrees on just like the unit of account with Bitcoin? Because right now we have, I don't even know how many currencies, we can't even count, right? I mean,
yeah, it's, yeah.
You know, do we even get to that point, you think?
I think so. I think money is on the way out. Like, I know that sounds ridiculous, but just as a thing, it will probably be a part of history in the future. So I don't think we're going to have, like, I don't think money's going to be around forever, because it's just a proxy for energy. So do we see a lot of currencies? No. A lot of them will die because it'll be too exhausting to bother maintaining versus the value they can capture from Bitcoin. A good example of this is a lot of people will change their lives professionally, where they'll change what they're doing because Bitcoin has allowed them to change what they're doing. In the same way, companies are going to do that. Perfect example, MicroStrategy. I don't know how many intelligence softwares they're selling at the moment. Like, you know, like, they do business intelligence software. Great. That's awesome. I don't think that's really that much on the horizon. I don't think the investors care about that. And so Bitcoin's just sucked all the air out of the room. And so now it looks foolish for Bitcoin, if Bitcoin's going to provide that much capital growth for them as an entity or an identity, then it does the same for individuals. It does the same for corporates. It'll do the same for governments. And what you're going to see is governments saying, well, we don't even want to bother maintaining our currency. Let's just deal in Bitcoin. That's the thing that's got us out of debt. That's the thing that's our biggest asset. That's our prized possession. let's take it to work. And I think a lot of countries start shaking hands and becoming on the same page a lot quicker, because there's this common denominator where if you're using my currency and I'm using your currency, we're both very much in alliance fiscally to support one another. And that then leads to a lot of de-escalation or diffusion, let's say, in conflicts or misalignments. Because when the root of your productivity, let's call it money, is aligned with the root of my productivity, money, and we've got the same form, it's like saying we take the same medicine. It's like saying we follow the same football team. And that alignment will find much more common ground faster than it will to sort of make, you know, to partition things more. Because right now everyone's really nervous that they're not going to have enough. Like, there's 8 billion of us on the planet, and that's what everyone's worried about each and every day when we wake up. Do we have food? Are we safe? Are we healthy or whatever? And so I think once everyone starts having their cup filled a bit more, they'll start feeling a bit stronger and feeling a bit more optimistic and stuff. Like, you see people that have moved onto a Bitcoin standard, a lot of people talk about how they're much more at peace, they're much happier, they're much more pleasant and all this sort of stuff. Because they're relaxed, they trust in Bitcoin. And I know that sounds ridiculous when you're talking about money, but look, it's a technology. And I think it's really important to back your horse. Like, you want to do your homework on a horse. And if it's still worth it and still stands up to your, you know, your rigorous sort of critiques, then I think get on board with it. And I think so many people are coming around to that as well. It's hard as well, though. Like, you can't blame people for not coming around to it. I get it. Oh, you're an idiot, dude. They're melting the money. You know, there's no gold in the thing, blah, blah. It's like, okay. But everyone's day to day, it's not that they're not intelligent. It's not that they're not nice. It's not that they're not trying to better their own lives. Everyone's day to day, you wake up, you know, a dog's barking next door. You're late for the bus. You get to work. You've got to hand in that thing for that spreadsheet. Then your boss yells at you. Then you got to do this. Then you got to do that. Then you come home. You're too exhausted to even think. Like, there's very little time for critical thinking because everyone is so smothered so constantly, basically. That's how I think about it.
No, 100%. And I think that you lined out MicroStrategy right early on in this rant you had on here, which I loved. But I want to dive into... Yeah. How you think it's going to revolutionize business? Because I think what we're going to see in the next whatever 30 days or so when we're recording this is going to be MicroStrategy's first earnings post FASB. And so for those who haven't been following along, that's essentially allowing MicroStrategy to add their positive gain on their quarterly earnings call. So the positive gain on their Bitcoin holdings, excuse me. So MicroStrategy has been losing money on paper for 4 years straight, and they're going to basically report potentially like billions worth of positive earnings this time, because it's going to be the first time that they can record positive earnings for their Bitcoin holdings, which I think is going to be...
Well, the average strike... Yeah, but the average strike price, I think, is like, was it 66K or something?
Yeah, so
let's hope it's not below that by the earnings call.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey, man, we took on like $50 billion in debt and we're in the hole.
I guess that is a scenario, because when I was thinking about this like a few weeks ago, we were sitting close to 100K. So I was like, this should be fine. But I guess that's a real possibility now.
This is a pretty animosity fueled market. Like, you know, if someone's not happy with them doing well, they, you know, and they're trying to punch the price into the ground, which is a hard task. But if they're trying to do that to discredit, you know, confidence in strategy and their approach and stuff, and all the other teams that are focused on having a Bitcoin standard, it's a very expensive exercise. Like, you're better to just buy Bitcoin and join on board instead of trying to ruin the party. But I think strategy is incredible. I think if I was starting a hedge fund today, I would go into every international market, find all the publicly traded companies, and I'd filter them all out for who are basically high probability of migrating onto a Bitcoin standard or basically beginning their acquisition of Bitcoin treasury. And that's where I put all the bets, pretty much. You'd obviously have obviously outside of Bitcoin, but if people are talking about stock markets, that's actual where the alpha is, in my opinion, because all these guys... the it's a law of diminishing returns as well. Like the first person to do it, which is strategy, has seen tremendous growth. The second people to do it will see some growth, but basically every market, every person on the stock market is going to want to support these companies because they're all not fucking morons and they all know that Bitcoin's going to pump. So the dudes that have no revenue, but they're sitting with 4,000 Bitcoins on their balance sheet, that became a sexy bet now because they're just, you're strapped onto the rocket ship of Bitcoin. Bonus points if you've got revenue. This is what teams are fighting to figure out. How do we keep giving a shit and keep working really hard when we've got all these Bitcoins? Like, and that's a thing because now it becomes more just like, hey, just don't ever worry about your fucking revenue line. Dude, you're making 20 cents a year. Don't worry about it. Just protect your treasury. Do not ruin it, you know? And that then becomes the goal. So in a weird way, I've always focused or talked about, like lately at least, I learned a lot from my team about the requirement of security. And I think like when I was working in the industry, which is running an exchange or like a brokerage service with my team, they, like the engineers and the architects, were just so brilliant. And they just made sure that you really knew every frame of change for how security works. And understanding that if everyone becomes a Bitcoin person and every company becomes a Bitcoin standard company, then the biggest conversation in the world will be security. Like there's no question about it. And so I think you're going to see a lot of delegation where a lot of these companies that are holding corporate stuff, or basically these corporate entities, right? We've had a huge retail boom. Now we're starting to see the cracks of the corporate market show up. So Strategy, Riot, or is it Riot, Marathon, whoever, all these guys that are basically holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And now it's an interesting thing because with that, everyone's holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet. We're going to start seeing the results of that, but that is the corporate layer. So Bitcoin's got retail, corporate, and nation state. That is a perfect example of the corporate layer. That goes up a lot really aggressively as banks begin custodying Bitcoins. The reason why a lot of companies don't do it at the moment is because it's fucking corporate gymnastics. The bank's got to figure out how to price it or how to risk, like how risky they are now from an AML and KYC perspective, which is totally unrelated, but they still have their rigmarole. They've got to put everything through. Then you've got, you know, how do you actually secure it effectively and not basically become a risk to your own company? And then it becomes a delegation to Coinbase or a qualified custodian and all these processes. But as banks become qualified custodians, it's going to make that bridge for any corporate company to basically have it as a, you know, a balance sheet item, much less friction, with a lot less friction. IBIT, the ETF, that's probably a good proxy for it, I'd say. But yeah. So anyway, there's lots to come, but you can sort of see how no matter where you spot, like no matter which way you slice it, if Bitcoin does what we think it's going to do, everyone is going to hold a lot of it. Everything becomes a security conversation. And like now it becomes every company is a professional security guard. Like they're trying to figure out how to protect their, you know, big stash of honey, basically. So it takes an interesting turn, I think, or like an interesting trajectory.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get wishing well tokens. You flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000, and they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin, and that's self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough for me, back to the show. Well, do you think that there's going to be multiple large companies? I mean, I have this theory here of Mark Zuckerberg potentially being a bigger Bitcoin bull than Michael Saylor, because right now the market cap of Meta is much larger than Strategy, and he has more voting rights than any other CEO anywhere close to above Strategy. So he, if he wanted to, who has two goats named Bitcoin and Maxi, he could, you know,
and he's gotten strategy. Bitcoin for a long time. Like, as in, he's grokked it for, you know, probably like 10 years or something. Like, he's been around, like, I think it's been kind of common that he's been across it for a while. Naturally, his dogs, that also helps. You don't name your dog after something that, you know, you hate or you dislike or anything like that. Oh, I wouldn't. That'd be a pain in the ass. But yeah, no, you're going to see a lot of these companies. Firstly, they're going to have a, we're starting to see now, because the performance is so aggressive in relation to the rest of the market, we're going to start seeing this public pressure for fiscal irresponsibility for boards and leadership teams who aren't doing it. Like right now, if I was a Microsoft shareholder and they were telling me they've got their money sitting in cash that is literally melting, I'd be furious. Like, I'd be like, obviously though, you know, you're not listening to me and you're not looking at the data. That's like a headless like chicken. That's terrible. And people go, oh, but they're a big company. Mate, they report to the same person everyone else does, you know, the balance sheet. So next year's balance sheet, they still report to that. So it doesn't matter what they're talking about. It doesn't matter how big or small you are. You got the same boss as I do. Next year's performance review from last year. I think anyway, so I think companies are going to get scorched if they don't, because if there's 20 companies making 2,000% increases over 18 months on the stock market, why the fuck aren't you? And it's like, oh, well, we're just a bigger company. We can't do that. Well, how are they getting this growth from it? Is it because their revenue is going up, so they're acquiring more customers, which would be indicative of a small startup that's just got a lot of volatility because of its size? But no, it's going to be from balance sheet optimization. You can't get away for it with a free lunch now. Your balance sheet needs to be absolutely awesome. And I think people with a Bitcoin one have the least confusing balance sheet with the most predictable balance sheet. I think. Anyway, could be wrong.
No, I mean, I think you're right, because I mean, if you look at the data, right? I mean, like mm-hmm. you said, you line it out there, like the Strategy wasn't in the S&P 500, but no. Comparatively to all of those stocks outside of maybe NVIDIA, depending on the day, it was the best performing stock last year of those big ones. And if you look at the trading volume of MicroStrategy or Strategy now is that of the Magnificent Seven. So it shouldn't be traded as much as it should, as it is, as like, I think it's like the 151st or 57th or something like that, largest company. So
it's the punching amount of way above its weight.
1,000%.
And there's some reason why. And that reason starts with B and ends in Bitcoin. You know, and that's the outlier. Like, if you're looking at the data, you go, how is this dude that's coming 151st in the race? You know, he's right up the top, like with the highest paid sponsorship or something. And it's like, oh, fuck. Okay, what are they doing differently? Oh, they've got this thing called Bitcoin and it's just fucking magical. It prints money for them. Oh my God, why aren't we doing that? Oh, because our bosses are old and they're still not really sure about it. And their mate who's also old, who's unread on it, he said not to do it. So that's the order of operations in our board. And it's like, if you're a publicly traded company or you're a CEO or whatever, you're going to be like, what the fuck? This is terrible. Because you feel like you're driving off a cliff. Like, literally, that's exactly how I would feel. I'm driving off a cliff. Great. Can't do anything about it.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's what all of these companies are doing. But it seems like a lot are starting to meet with Michael Saylor, whether it's GameStop, you know, Michael Dell. He just took a picture in there with Howard Lutnick today. So, you know, it seems like these companies are coming. And how do you think that that's going to, I guess, like revolutionize business? Like, one, do you think that people have been able to value companies properly that are putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet yet? Unless you're just like a full-fledged maxi, do you think that people are really even, I guess, aware what's going on yet?
No, that's why it's a free lunch for anyone in Bitcoin right now to just go to all those companies that are going to have Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Just look at the performance, Metaplanet, strategy, whatever you want to go, pick anyone and you'll just see they have an outlier of performance. That's because they're doing something different. It's like a steroided up, you know, person in a running race, or a car that's got a jet engine instead of a Fred Flintstone car. You're never going to get the same lap time. There's a new technology there that is getting this lap time much faster than yours. And it's because it's such a breakthrough. And I think people need to sort of stop trying to use their brain and just read the tea leaves, literally. Stop overthinking it. Stop rewriting history. Like, stop trying to do everything. You're doing too much. Just do less and Bitcoin, and everything else will come. And it's like, I think a lot of companies are learning that. Now, what happens to the products that we have every day and the, you know, things like that? The quality of products will go up. The volume of products will go down materially. So basically, people are going to do fewer things really well, because the reason why people do so many things now and half of them are really bad quality is because they're doing product line extensions to try and increase revenue. They're trying to increase revenue because times are hard. So if they've got a revenue increasing machine, which is what Bitcoin should be thought of, a capital growth machine, then they're going to basically just be like, no, fuck it. We don't need to do the bells and whistles products. They were just money spinners. Let's just do our core product, which is the iPhone, or, you know, the running shoe, or whatever it is. I don't know. But I think, so we're going to see a shrink in the amount of products that are made. And I also definitely think we're going to see a tremendous amount of reduction in the amount of products we all buy and want. I think one of the biggest things with Bitcoin, it starts teaching you about, it sets such a high bar for value of like what something is actually valuable, that it makes you go, well, I mean, fuck, what do I really want to do that? Or do I want to just stack more sats? And it's like, yeah, fuck it, I'll stack sats. I don't really need to have that nice dinner. I'm just going to make some dinner at home or something, you know, like, and then you just turn into this dude, like the tightest ass in the world, like the biggest tight ass in the world, because you're always just like, look, that's a Bitcoin, you know, like, you know, or whatever. So anyway, it's interesting. You're learning, and I feel like we're all evolving as we see this technology, because we all haven't had something like that. Like, remember, this thing's really stubborn. Think about how much stuff changes every day in our lives, in the world. Everything, rules, color, like what, not colors, but rules, pictures, movies, stories, everything. Bitcoin can't. No one on earth can change it. That's wild. That's like being the most stubborn person on earth and nobody being able to change your mind. Like, nobody. There's no incentive to change your mind. That's incredible. Like, that's cool as well. I just think that's rad. Like, just that alone, money, no money, whatever. It's just this stubborn thing. Because then it becomes like building, it's like Excalibur. No one can take the sword out of the stone. Like, it's impossible, you know? And like, that's interesting to me. That's interesting.
Yeah. So how do you see society, I guess, then playing out? Because we're right now in like a consumer heavy society, right? Where people need to spend in order to make things go around. Then how do you see us kind of changing into that? Let's get a little philosophical out here.
Oh yeah. I reckon people hang up the grind and they find the peace. Like, you know, people aren't going to try and become CEOs of companies. They're going to become CEOs of their purpose, and their lives will be focused on growing and acquiring more skills to be fulfilled and live a purposeful life. Because I think in the process of a lot of people that make it through Bitcoin, like, an understanding money better, one of the things you start understanding is how little value it really has. Like, as in, it will never, like, you know, having money isn't wealth, basically. Like, you know, having community, family, friends, all that sort of stuff, that's wealth. Because those are things that are, you know, you acquire over your life. You know, so I think that's what people start learning, is they go, oh, yeah. Well, none of this stuff's really as valuable as Bitcoin. Then you say, well, what is as valuable as Bitcoin? It starts becoming questions of things around time. My time, your time, time together, time doing something, whatever it is. And then all these things start becoming real. Those things are real. Oh, I want to spend, you know, more time with these people in my life. I want to learn a new skill. I want to do this. I don't know. I think people will become a bit more like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I just think people's, like, the pace of people will cool down, and people will be able to sort of find more of themselves instead of more of the what have I got to do today to fucking survive this Hunger Games planet where my money's melting by 15%. You know, like, I think that's really cool, because then there's a lot of people are going to learn heaps about themselves for better, like for the better as well, like understanding how capable we all are, how we do have passions and desires and like goals from when we were little, when our brains were very uncluttered and we could think very purely without knowing what we know and stuff. And you get to go back to that dude or to that person, like girl or boy, whoever it is, like your younger self. And you'd be like, hey, dude, like, I'm 20 years ahead of you or 30 years ahead of you. Like, what were your what goals do you want me to achieve to make you happy? You know, it's like you work for the little version of you in a way. I think that's pretty cool, because if you're not sorting him out, like, who else? Like, you know, you're going to make him happy, surely. You know? Or maybe not. I don't know.
No, I think you definitely do, right? I think we all want to make that little kid inside us, you know, 100%. Super happy. 100%. And I had a kind of a similar discussion with Jeff Booth, and he said something interesting where it's like, all right, the Bitcoin that I'm using today to buy coffee could be buying, you know, cars down the line. Now, with that, you know, like, it seems kind of crazy to think that why would I go buy a Starbucks coffee if I could buy a, you know, a Lambo 10 years down the road. But, you know, I think it's, you know, it's almost kind of like a balancing act with what we're seeing right now. So, you know,
okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty, but simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
How do you, I guess, see the evolution of where we're at in Bitcoin right now? Do you see it as more of like a store of value, as you kind of said, with these businesses, you know, you got to protect that balance sheet almost like as well as personally? Or do you see it kind of as Jack Dorsey says, where if we just get to digital gold, then Bitcoin has failed?
I mean, I wouldn't say anything's a failure, win or lose, either from here. Like, it could never fail because it's already made such a profound impact that no matter what happens moving forward, it has already made the trajectory of whatever, wherever we end up as a species, it's changed it forever. So it's always got that. So I think it can never fail because it's turned so many people's brains on as well. It's made people think, oh my God, you know, like if you're doing a startup, like you think, oh, I want to build the coolest calendar app ever and help people get organized. No. Like Satoshi sat down and goes, what else can we change on this planet? Yeah, money. That shit's trash. Let's have a better money. Like, how cool is that? Like, that's so cool. You can disrupt that level of, like, that's just thinking so big, though. Like, I just didn't think that was possible. And I think now it's like a lot of other people are going to sort of think that way, think bigger, like go for bigger things. But yeah, I think over time, everyone's relationship with money will change, basically, which is very possible. Like, think of a video game or a movie that you used to love. Think of a song you used to love. Think of a restaurant or your favorite dish that you used to love. You change your preferences. That is natural. That is human. That is like, that's what time is. It's like the evolution of preference. And it's like, if you think about that now, it's like, what is everyone going to prioritize in the future? I genuinely think. I think it's going to be, you know, experiences, time together, yeah, I don't know. It's such a tricky one because you've got to kind of try and look into a crystal ball, but I definitely know everyone's going to be happier. That's for sure.
And I believe that. I mean, Bitcoin has 100% changed my life. I mean, it changed my career path and everything else as well. So it's definitely, you know, had an effect on me. It's, so
it's, It's the biggest gift ever. It's like being around for the invention of the wheel, but you get to buy into its invention and get royalties forever until everyone stops using the wheel. Sounds like an all right trade. You got a better idea? Like,
it sounds pretty nice to me, to be honest with you. And it has been pretty good as well. Yeah. So, with that being said, right? I mean, we talked about like the businesses kind of developing. How do you see it changing with governments? I mean, we've got potential. Well, we've got now the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve. It just moved over, seized Bitcoin into a strategic reserve. Do you see there as like a future of governments? Or are we going to have basically
1,000%? 1,000%. So here, I just literally did a talk about this 3 days ago at Bitcoin Alive, which is like the primary, Bitcoin conference of Australia, let's say, and like Bitcoin only. So they don't do crypto stuff. Anyway, we're talking about the strategic reserve. And what I was saying is, firstly, yes, it's wildly important. Like, you're in debt, you're shit at managing money, not being rude, you're good at lots of stuff, but not managing money. And so, like, and that's like telling a friend, right? Like, you might have a friend who's the best basketball player in the world. He's the best, whatever, best, you know, hedge fund guy. I don't know, whatever he does, but he might be shit with his money. And it doesn't mean that you're insulting him. It means that you're trying to help them basically like improve. Bitcoin will help every government improve and solve their primary problem, which is debt. So we know it was World War D is what I call it, which is basically everyone is in the world, like every country in the world is at war against debt right now. And they're just fighting the same enemy. And Bitcoin is like that mad sniper from the war that's got, 100,000 kills and people don't even know if he's alive anymore or not, but he's rumored to be there. And like, Bitcoin's like the veteran that's cleaning everything up. But yeah, so everyone's at war. So what are governments going to do? Everyone's got a problem with debt. So we're all going to start understanding, well, this is a good trade to get out of debt or to at least back and pad our reserves with something that can grow at a rate that is meaningful enough for the public to think we can actually get the debt paid off, which I think they can with Bitcoins. But the other thing is what's going to happen now is, well, no one wants to sell their Bitcoins. So where do you buy them from? How do governments keep making sure they're going to have a steady supply of them? Well, what we do, we start bringing miners into the country. I'm going to incentivize. So if I was running Australia right now, I'd make sure that we acquire some coins and then to get basically a pipeline set up where I'd say all Bitcoin miners across the world, please come to Australia and utilize all our stranded energy and we're going to pay you 1% or 2% over spot price, whatever you name the exchange, we're paying 2% over it. And that's how they acquire it, because the government can afford to pay 2% now for something that's going to go up 25% a year for the next ever. So like that seems like a good trade for them. The miners are in the most competitive environment on earth. There is no more aggressive competition than Bitcoin mining right now. It's the most competitive game in town. So when you offer a 1% or 2% margin above spot, that's changing their life. Like that's epic, because now their energy costs have just changed dramatically. So now what am I going to do? I'm basically going to have 1,000,001 people. Oh, you went dark, Batman.
Yeah, I went dark. I told you the light. I told you pre-show the light's going to die on me. It always does.
Oh, man, don't worry about it.
Don't stop the rant, man. I'll figure this lighting situation out.
What were we talking about?
Dude, oh, man. You were saying about the...
the energy. Okay, energy. So basically all the Bitcoin miners are going to get... Basically, people are going to be fighting for their love to come to their country. Because when they come, they're going to find all the energy. They're like the biggest tight ass of a friend that you've got. They know where all the stranded energy is. They can figure out ways to get value from it. And that's a really good thing. Now you're going to secure energy for your future of the country. You're going to have balanced grids and you're going to have a steady pipeline or supply chain of acquiring Bitcoins. And that you can set your whole country up for. Like, that's incredible. There you go. Much better. Right.
Yeah, I'm getting a little light on it for you now, but I definitely think that is going to be the future. I mean, we've had Samson Mao talk a lot about that. I think, Bitcoin mining is going to, potentially revolutionize the way governments look at money, at their energy, all of that different aspect of it. But does the crypto and kind of intertwining that worry you in a sense?
Yeah, the crypto thing's them playing the game. Like, and anyone that can't see that, it's like, I don't think, look, I think there's people were thinking, oh my God, they're Bitcoin maximalists. They're going to just everything Bitcoin, and they're going to turn the whole country onto a Bitcoin standard overnight. They're politicians. They need money. And so if XRP and all these other currencies are going to pay them, then if you're a politician, which is what they are first before a Bitcoin friend, is they're going to take the money. And that's good, because if they're doing things that are favorable to an asset that I'm building my life around, then do whatever it is that you need to do that will make sure that my asset is around long beyond myself, basically. So I don't think it's a right thing to do, but I get why they've done it. Like, as in, I wouldn't do that, because it's not really, there's nothing strategic about it. You're just acquiring assets, almost like a country supporting its startups. That's how I think about it. It's where like, okay, cool, you're going to give us kickbacks, we're going to put a pile together, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool, we're on the boat with you. Cool. Now they're co-owners in that, basically, because they've got stock in that, which is just what they're trying to do with TikTok, right? They want to get 50% ownership of TikTok. So they're probably going to start trying to acquire as much ownership of these protocols, I would imagine. But yeah, I think the only conversation really now, and it hasn't hit yet, but it will, is it's going to become Bitcoin only, because as you see some countries start taking off and go really aggressive on the Bitcoin approach, it's going to be like, you know, is MicroStrategy or Metaplanet going to start adding a strategic Cardano reserve, you know, or measuring their Cardano yield per share? Like, I don't think so. And I think that's because you can do one thing. Like, everyone's going to be going from mile wide, inch deep to inch wide, mile deep, which is one coin. It moves 24/7. It's so complex that I don't know how I could be thorough on more than one coin, because this thing's so deep, it just keeps going and going and going. And so I think people are going to make choices like that. And you're going to see some short-term interest where people make a lot of money off the smaller cap tokens because they can grow further. Like, for instance, if I started a lemonade stand outside my house right now, and I sold a lemonade today, and then I sold 10 tomorrow, I've had 1,000% increase day over day in sales. Now I'm performing better than, you know, Sprite. Like, my company is performing better than Sprite, it's essentially. Now, obviously, that's not reality, because it's a small company and it's very easy to increase your sales 10 times over a day if you sold one. And so I think now you're going to see that happen with the tokens. So you see a lot of people buy these tokens, acquire them, they'll make a win, they'll make a loss, and it just, all the juice won't be worth the squeeze. Because remember, you've got to secure them as well. People think that's easy. And once they realize it's not easy, you're going to start being like, well, man, I don't want to have to go to the fucking, you know, fly across the country to go get a vault key to fly back to unlock it with this other guy, just so we can sell some of our bags of this thing that went up that we bought last week. I just think it's going to end up too much busy work. Things aren't that serious now, but as things get harder, or as, like, you know, as the game, like the game theory, I don't really like that term, but it is what it is. Like, yeah, as countries start competing to acquire bitcoins, people are going to start being like, yeah, okay, everyone, we've got to focus on one thing. Because at the end of the day, they don't have a dog in the fight. Everyone's key motivator is to make money. And if there's the easiest way to make money that gives you the most time, people will take that over staying super busy and adding more headaches and stress to try and make, you know, an extra 2.5 or 5% or something. They'll be getting so much out of one thing that they won't be bothered to try and squeeze everything else. They'll be like, what's the point? Do you know? I don't know, but I think.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's revolutionizing the way governments are going to be looking at things. But I think the crazy thing with all of this is that Michael Saylor is telling people out in the open, hey, the U.S. government should buy 5 to 25% of the overall Bitcoin market, which would be 5 times bigger than what Cynthia Lummis is proposing. And if the government starts doing that and it's all public, that FOMO is going to carry over into other nation states, into traditional finance, and then the top's being blown off, and we're going to see some craziness start to come here. So do you think that that's where we're at, where, you know, as we're seeing these crazy bullish news start to come out, that we're almost to the point of the top being blown off?
No, I'm a bit more conservative like that. I still think, like, you know, I think the end of like by the end of this cycle, it's a $250,000 Bitcoin. But I do agree, like, I don't know how the cycles, like 4-year cycles, hangs on through such acute growth, which is something like a nation state acquisition strategy that goes bananas. Like, I don't know how that works. But yeah, I don't, for some reason, I'm not the person that thinks it's, oh, it's $1 million this year and then 20 the next year when no one can say no to Bitcoin. Like, are there, and a lot of people are right in like their assumptions on that. Like my brother is always been just astronomical on his projections, but he's not like he's trying to make it up. Like he quantifies everything and he's like, where am I wrong? And it's like, I can't see it either. So that's sort of where we go. And it's like, you see, like, I think it will go, but just gets there incrementally. But yeah, it just feels, I feel like my opinion's wrong on this though. Like I definitely don't have a lot of conviction that these 4-year models can hold just because it feels like a threshold point in like an energy system. So let's say like a plane and a sonic boom. That sonic boom is a moment where everything changes. There's something before the sonic boom and after the sonic boom. And that's like a total, like a change in the energy structure or perception of the moving vehicle. In the same way, I think Bitcoin could have a sonic boom moment, which people call maybe more like a super cycle, where it just snaps to the upside and people just jump on the train. And basically humanity spends the next 10 years getting 8 billion people onto Bitcoin, like this mass migration, like animals through the Serengeti or whatever they do, you know, those in Africa.
My favorite thing about Bitcoin is meeting Bitcoiners in person. That's why I'm so excited to tell you guys about what is going on June 14th down in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. That's the Sound Money Soiree paired with Bitcoin Day. They're bringing a full day of great talks with amazing speakers like your boy here. And we're topping it off with a black tie event just for you and bring in that hot lady friend. We had Bitcoin cross 100K. We're all getting girlfriends, folks. So come on down to beautiful Tampa, Florida. And if you use the link below, you will get 10% off your entire order, whether you want to go to just the black tie event or black tie event plus Bitcoin Day, you'll get 10% off using the links below. Also, if you're thinking about going to BitBlock Boom in April, if you're going to Vegas in May, or if you're thinking about going to Prague in June, use my promo code GreenCandle for all of those. You'll get 10% off your entire order. And come bug me. I hope to see you guys very soon at one of these great in-person events. Enough from me. Back to the show.
Yeah, so you brought up animals. I want to have a little fun here. Everybody hears the accent. They all know you're Australian here. So they have the Australian stereotypes that it is crazy to live out in Australia. So I've pulled out some a list here.
Yeah.
And I want to see which ones you think you could beat in a fight here. So, and how many of them you think you could take at one time? So the first one I want to start off with you, Michael, is a koala. How many koalas you think you could beat? If you think you could beat at least one.
I mean, dude, I don't know. I don't even know. Maybe five or something, three.
All right, five. Three to five koalas, I'll take that.
Koalas are like a dog to me. I think I'd feel slacked like doing anything. I'd probably just start eating eucalyptus leaves with them. Do you know what those things, by the way? You know why they're so docile and stuff? Because the eucalyptus leaves that they eat, I think, makes them high.
I've actually heard.
So they're like, hey, how good's this trick?
I've also heard that they contract a lot of STDs too. But that's
I think they've got like chlamydia planet thing.
I don't know. Look, I don't know.
Don't know.
I've heard it on Animal Planet. That's all I'm saying, dude. I just stay up and watch that sometimes. All right. The next one. How about a wombat? They're a little bit smaller. So how many of those?
Dude, they're smaller, but yo, like wombats are so dense. Like they are tough. Like it's not like squidgy skin. It's almost like cartilage. Like that same, like kind of like. Yeah, I don't know, dude, mate, not many. Like, I don't know. I'm pathetic like that. So I'd be running.
All right.
And some of them are mangy, which means they've got shit growing on them, like this disease. It's, it's filthy.
So, all right. Then what about a wallaby? How many of those?
Oh, dude, do you know, like, they're really good. Like, I don't know if wallabies do the same thing, but I'm pretty sure they would. But boxing kangaroos is like an Australian icon because kangaroos literally bounce on their back of their tail, kick you, like, with their legs, like, full strength, and then they'll throw hands at you. And it's like, dude, this is like fighting a really good Thai boxer or something, like...
So then the follow-up question, I was going to leave the kangaroo for last, but do you think you could beat a kangaroo in a fight?
Oh, like, I'd throw a few, but I'd get toweled up hard. Like, and probably clawed to death, too.
They're big, too. They weigh, like, a significant amount.
Dude, like, you'd have a crack at it, like, and you would come off it. Like, I don't think any human, like, because when they're bouncing on their tail, they're going to be like Yao Ming or like bigger than like, you know, like six, like, I don't know, 7'8" or some shit.
Yeah. Yeah. They're big. And I've seen a couple in real life and I'm like, damn, I don't know. Like Kangaroo Jack. I believe that movie is pretty true where they could,
I'd be more handing over my wallet and my phone and just being like, nah, we're good, dude. I'm don't want any trouble.
Exactly. All right. Well, then the last one's going to be the classic, the crikey, the crocodile. Do you think you could take one of them?
Not 0%. So I think, and this is from a smart dude that I know, we were arguing over the best apex predator on the planet, and we were trying to argue between a crocodile, a saltwater crocodile, and a great white shark. Yeah, and I don't know, but saltwater crocodiles, dude, like, just they're so scary. They're so scary. Like, they're just so strong. They're like a dinosaur. Like, they've got scales. Like, they're like... they truly are like a dinosaur. Like, they would have held their own throwing hands back in prehistoric, like, ages. And there was a thing, listen to this, there's actually a thing, I can't remember its name, it's got some Latin name, but it's called, like, Sarasuchus crocodilus or something. And it was, like, it would have been, like, a 20 meter or 15, or yeah, 20 meters long, like, the size of a bus, but a crocodile. Like, back in the prehistoric ages when everything was bigger or whatever. But, yeah, that was meant to be a thing. Dude, a crocodile the size of a bus? Not for me. Not for me. Thank you very much. Nope. I'm out of here. Dude, I'd rather swim with great white sharks. I've done that before. I got to swim with great white sharks in South Africa. Dude, you don't understand.
In a cage or just free open?
No, fucking cage, man. I want to do stuff with my life. Hoo-wee.
I was about to say, man. I mean, they have the rumors that Australians are absolutely crazy. So,
but there are people that do that. There are people like, I'm just, that's like, but just like, okay, here's an interesting thing, right? You're standing on the top of the boat and you're on like this reef, like let's say outside of Cape Town, and you'll look down. I remember standing at the top of the boat and like looking down at the water, and they've got these big like garbage bin trash cans, and they've got shark soup in it, which is like blood and guts and all this stuff to try and attract its chum. Anyway, and you're on there, and it was like something out of Jaws, dude, where I was like, look down, and I saw this shadow under the water, but it was like the size of the boat. I'm not even joking. I was like, it's like a submarine. And that's the nickname for one of these sharks over in Cape Town, which I think is the largest recorded great white. It's called the submarine. And it was like 8.5 meters long or something.
Oh my God.
Dude, they're so fast, man. Like, they're like a boat underwater. Like, they can swim 30 knots, 35 knots, which is like 35 miles an hour.
Yeah,
like secondary. So the weird thing is, but the good thing about it is you get this mad feeling where it's like, it's almost like you realize you're not at the top of the food chain, and you immediately feel like a caveman, or like you feel just totally like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but you just feel second. It's like, yeah, what did you want? Yep, no worries. Yes, boss. Like, if they asked for anything, you'd get it straight away kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I have asked this question to a couple people, not on the show, but what freaks you out more? The thought of just being lost in space or just lost in the ocean?
Ocean.
Yeah, I'm with you on that because there's so much we don't know. And just like what you described there of that shark, like just looking down, just seeing that giant, Dude, I couldn't, like, space is like, okay, well, we don't know really what's out there. There's probably something, who knows? And maybe we just float away. But the fact that, yeah, we're living on this planet, we don't know everything that's going on. And we're not even close to the top of the food chain, but just seeing like a shark underneath my boat like that would freak me out so much.
Dude, and when you jump in the water and you see these things, they come out of nowhere. No, like, you cannot see them until the very last second. And so it's like, no wonder these seals and shit are getting absolutely mauled. It's like, I don't care if you're a cat. These things are so slick and there's no sound. So you've got no, like, you, like, that's an, a sense that's just taken from you basically, where you're like, fuck, you know, that's usually a good thing. If you hear a tiger like rustling in the trees or something, like, yeah, it's like, what was that? You can't hear it. And these things swim vertically up to get heaps of pressure, like heaps and heaps of speed. But yeah, you'd see, you'd be in a like a cage, and this thing is like, it would be, yeah, it's like a small boat cruising past you, and it cruises past so quickly, so elegantly as well, like super agile. Man, beautiful creatures. Like, I don't want any trouble with those dudes.
Amen to that. But thanks for playing along with me here, Michael. So I really appreciate your time coming on, man. So tell us a little bit more where the people can find out more about you and more about what you got going on.
Great question. I think most of my stuff I just put on my Twitter. Like, it's Michael Dunwert one. So it's my name without the H. And then I put the other stuff on GitHub, which is just Bitcoin related stuff and interesting thing about energy and just stuff that I find intriguing and stuff like that.
All right. Awesome stuff. I'll put all that in the show notes. So Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show and everybody. Dude, listening.
Thanks for having me, Brandon.
Of course, man. It was a blast. So everybody listening, smash the like button. Tell us in the comments what you thought of Michael coming on. Hit the subscribe, 5-star, do the whole nine. Bye. And Mike, thanks so much, man.
Like him and sub. Bye, dude. Thanks very much.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.